This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Last night, President Bush delivered his fourth State of the Union address to members of the House and Senate. His 53-minute speech touched on a laundry list of issues, but the president spent a lot of time discussing changes he has in mind for Social Security.
One of America's most important institutions, a symbol of the trust between generations, is also in need of wise and effective reform. Social Security was a great moral success of the 20th century, and we must honor its great purposes in this new century. The system, however, on its current path is headed toward bankruptcy, and so we must join together to strengthen and save Social Security.
The president also talked about moral values and the sanctity of marriage.
So many of my generation, after a long journey, have come home to family and faith and are determined to bring up responsible moral children. Government is not the source of these values, but government should never undermine them. Because marriage is a sacred institution and the foundation of society, it should not be redefined by activist judges. For the good of families, children, and society, I support a constitutional amendment to protect the institution of marriage.
The second half of his address focused on international issues. As in his inauguration address 2 weeks ago, the president stressed the need to continue the fight for freedom across the globe.
The only force powerful enough to stop the rise of tyranny and terror and replace hatred with hope is the force of human freedom. Our enemies know this, and that is why the terrorist Zarqawi recently declared war on what he called the evil principle of democracy. And we've declared our own intention. America will stand with the allies of freedom to support democratic movements in the Middle East and beyond, with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world.
In this hour of Talk of the Nation, we'll also take a look at the Super Bowl ads that already have people talking. But first, the State of the Union address. Are the issues you heard addressed last night the issues you elected the president for? What didn't he talk about that you wish he had? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And you can send an email question. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Ken Mehlman, the new chairman of the Republican National Committee. He joins us by cell phone from New York City. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Ken Mehlman, the president made it pretty clear that reforming Social Security is one of his top priorities. Is that what the people elected him to do? Is that where he starts or should start his new term?
Well, I think it is. One of the things that the president was very clear about wherever he traveled, everywhere in the country, was the need for this generation to not sweep problems under the rug, but to deal with them so that the future was more hopeful and more prosperous. And there's nothing more important we can do than to make sure that Social Security is secure and safe when the baby boomers retire, and we go from a place where there are 16 workers for every retiree on Social Security to 2 workers for every retiree.
Is the president clear at this point on exactly what he wants, or does he really want to have a dialogue on the various points? He brought up several possible changes that he'd be willing to entertain, but how clear is he, do you think, at this point?
I think he's clear on 2 things. First, he's clear on basic principles. He's clear that as long as he's president, nobody 55 or over should have any change in their Social Security, period. Secondly, he's changed, and whatever we do can't just be putting a Band-Aid on a problem. It's got to solve the problem. Social Security is too important for gimmicks. Third principle is that we need to allow younger workers to have the option of setting up a voluntary personal retirement account if they choose. But beyond that, this president is very much willing to, and I forgot a fourth one. The fourth one is there cannot be a payroll tax increase, because that will be devastating to our economy. Beyond those 4, the president wants to work with folks. John Kerry, during the campaign, said we ought to consider means testing, meaning that wealthy people don't get as much Social Security as other folks do. That's an option. Other people have suggested other means. John Breaux and Tim Penny, two Democrats that have retired, suggested other means of calculating Social Security. President says, I want to work in a good faith dialogue, Democrats and Republicans, as long as we meet these basic principles, starting with the fact that it's no change to those at 55 or over.
So are there other issues that he, you know, that he feels or that you feel he absolutely has to tackle on this in this administration in order to fulfill his promises during the campaign? You know, not just the promises in specific sense, but the promises as this is how I'm going to behave as president.
Well, and there's no question continuing to fight the war on terror, continuing to make sure we have victory in Iraq so we're safer at home is very important. The president wants to make sure our economy keeps growing, and that means we need to take action in order to reduce the number of lawsuits, and also taxation and litigation. We've got to deal with those as well. And you heard the president last night talk about his commitment to make sure that activist judges aren't redefining key institutions in our communities, and I think you'll see him lead on that as well.
What about some of the social policy issues? He did talk about the sanctity of marriage, and he talked some more about protecting embryos, but he didn't dwell on that quite as much.
Well, that was what I was just mentioning. Look, one of the biggest debates we have in this country today is, do we believe that communities and legislatures ought to be defining institutions like marriage, ought to be making decisions, or do we think activist judges ought to substitute their judgment for the judgment of the people's representatives? And whether you're talking about marriage or partial birth abortion or some of these other issues that you're talking about, in each case, there's a common denominator, and that is a judge who says, I know better than the people. This president believes the people know better.
Right. Is there anything that you would have liked to hear, you as an advisor and as the new chairman of the Republican National Committee, that you would like to have heard last night that you didn't?
I thought it was a great speech. I thought that it really put in perspective what our country is doing both internationally and what our challenge is at home. I mean, I thought it was very effective when he said that the goal is not just the State of the Union today, but the State of the Union in the future. And if we learned anything, I think, on September 11th, it was that unless we confront problems when they're arising, that if we wait till it's too late, we're going to have much bigger problems to deal with. And that's the war on terror, and that also deals with how do we reform our governmental institutions so that when the baby boomers retire, Social Security is strong, and healthcare security is strong, and our economy is strong.
You know, I wonder what you think about the response. I didn't see who was responding this way, but I think we can safely say that it was Democrats making disparaging noises at some of the issues that the president raised about Social Security. Is that, you know, that's not such an auspicious start for somebody who's going to try to accomplish these things if he's got people practically hooting at him from the peanut gallery
well,
to begin with.
I think it's unfortunate, but I think it's also a threat for the Democrats. Look, anger is not an agenda, and obstruction is not a way to convince people to support your way of doing things. And so I think that Democrats and Republicans ought to come together, I hope they will, and say, let's put, based on these principles the president's laid out, options on the table and make sure this important program remains.
Right. Has the president, I mean, the president's done, I guess, what a lot of presidents do when they know they're going to have some problems directly with Congress. They hit the road and take their case out to the people, as they say. Is that the right move for the president at this point?
The president's done it since the beginning of his administration. He did the same thing in 2001 on behalf of tax reform. He's done the same thing whenever there's been these legislative issues. At the end of the day, the people make these decisions, and the legislators usually respond to the will of the people.
Usually. I mean, but do you think that this will be successful? I mean, he's starting right away. I mean, if you were a betting man, would you say at this point that this is going to go through, some version of Social Security reform is going to emerge from these next 4 years?
I do. I think that this president's committed to it. I think that good faith members of Congress from both parties understand that this system's not sustainable. It's right for the American people. And this is why you want strong leaders, because what you want them to do is do what's right for the long term, not necessarily what's easy or what's politically expedient. By the way, I think politically this is also something that Democrats and Republicans that vote for will be rewarded by the constituents for helping to make sure Social Security is there in the long term. But ultimately, this is about doing the right thing.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Ken Mehlman.
Thank you. I apologize for the cell phone.
Oh, that's all right. It actually, the fear was that it would disappear, but I guess the coverage wherever you are is adequate. So thanks very much for sticking with us. Ken Mehlman is the chairman of the Republican National Committee. He joined us by cell phone from New York City. Joining us now to discuss the State of the Union address and what the president was elected to do are Jonah Goldberg, the editor-at-large of National Review Online and a nationally syndicated columnist. He joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And also with us is Michael Crowley, a senior editor at the New Republic. He, too, joins us in Studio 3A. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with you, Jonah Goldberg, and say, you know, is the president right? Is he satisfying the people who he elected him by tackling Social Security head on in his, you know, first few days of his new administration?
I think he's satisfying a certain constituency within the Republican Party and within the country at large. It is one of the things he campaigned on, not just in 2000, not just in 2004, but in 2000 as well. He's talked about it a lot. And that doesn't mean that every constituency in the Republican Party or every voter thinks that this should be his first priority. But this is a big job. And I think Bush realizes he really only has 1 year to make a lot of headway. And so he's picked the toughest one first. He thinks he can that this is the one to go for. He has to pick something. I'm sure there are pro-lifers in the conservative movement that would rather he tackled abortion-related issues or gay marriage or whatever, but this is the one he's picked, and it's not as if it's a surprise to a lot of people.
Michael Crowley, briefly, what do you think?
Well, it's not shocking. I think that the emphasis he's putting on it now is totally out of proportion with the degree which he talked about on the campaign trail. I think it was not one of the primary issues on which he campaigned on. And given how quickly he pivoted from the election into making this his signature issue, it suggests that he knew going into the campaign he was going to hit this hard, and he didn't talk about it as much as he is now.
Okay, we're taking a short break, and when we return, more about the State of the Union and the goals of the Bush administration and more of your calls, 800-989-TALK, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Joe Palca, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in for Neil Conan. We're talking about the State of the Union. Did the president address your concerns in his speech? Is he doing what he was elected to do? We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. With us here in Studio 3A are Jonah Goldberg, editor-at-large of National Review Online, and Michael Crowley, senior editor at The New Republic. And Michael Crowley, back to you. I mean, the president, you know, Social Security doesn't necessarily rank as the top issue in people's mind. But it did become an issue. I mean, you were starting to say, is it right to be focusing on this now, do you think?
I would say that it suggests to me that there was some element of bait and switch here. It was clear, given how quickly the administration launched into their Social Security sales pitch, that even in the fall of last year, they intended to make this the prevailing issue in Washington after the election. And it was not the prevailing issue in his campaign stump speech. I think, frankly, my sense is that voters generally agreed with John Kerry more on domestic policy issues, but that Bush kind of made it over the finish line through the endless invocation of 9/11 and the war on terror.
Well, I think that raises...
Jonah Goldberg, I was going to ask you, is it bait and switch or something? That's not the fair way to...
I don't think bait and switch is really the fair way to describe it. I agree that the central issue of the campaign was the war on terror, the war in Iraq. President Bush very forthrightly went out there and basically said, vote for me and stay the course. John Kerry very forthrightly, even in retrospect now, agrees that those were the themes of the campaign, and it was stay the course versus new direction with John Kerry on foreign policy. So once Bush got in, that part of the election was already settled. Bush is staying the course. That's what he was elected to do. The foreign policy part was taken care of, and then you have to move to the domestic policy part. And this, you know, there are all sorts of reasons why Bush is going in for Social Security. Among them, the fact that he was actually a huge spender in his first term. He wasn't a very free market, small government conservative. And I think this is one of his ways of making amends on that point. But also, if you don't deal with it first, you're not going to be able to deal with it at all. Mm-hmm. And so he's using his political priorities. And he did talk about private accounts. He did talk about personal accounts a great deal. And so that's what he's going after.
All right, let's take a call and hear what our listeners have to say about this. First, let's go to Fred in Sunnyvale, California. Fred, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. yes, this is Fred Rounds from Sunnyvale. What I basically heard last night in the presentation were a lot of traditional words that the president uses frequently, freedom in particular, tyranny, words like this, values and so on, words that have a rather large latitude of interpretation from one person to the next. And basically, when you sort of look at it from that perspective, from the wider perspective of what these words can mean, you know, it creates a lot of confusion and contradiction, I think, in the words and then adding the deeds connected to that. For example, the freedom of Iraq was basically an invasion, a preemptive invasion of Iraq based on very poor intelligence, to say the least, perhaps exaggerated obfuscations, things of that nature that really are quite obvious, I think, to the American people. But so the end result is confusion, and I think I find that to be very problematic and very much on the border of propaganda in many ways.
Well, Fred, thanks for that comment. Jonah Goldberg, you know, these are words, obviously, that have a lot of meanings, but was the president insufficiently precise in what he had in mind, or did he actually lay out a clear enough plan for Iraq, for example?
Well, I actually thought he was very clear, and I'm really not sure how he's confusing. I mean, it's one of these things where the goalposts about criticism of Bush keep changing, and sometimes he's being called too rigid, as when he's sort of sticking by the Iraqi elections, and then the criticism was that he's become too flexible because he gives in to certain things and gives in to circumstances. I think last night he was very clear. He raised the issue of the timetable that Ted Kennedy had put forward for withdrawal, and he said, we're not going to do that. We're going to stay there for a result. Those were his words. And I think given the context and the news that we've had over the last couple of weeks, I think it's pretty clear what he means by freedom and tyranny and all these sorts of things. And I think the election in Iraq was underscored exactly what he's been talking about for a very long time.
Okay, let's take another call. How about if we go to Layton in Charleston, South Carolina? Layton, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Listening to the president's speech and seeing that he's going to tackle the challenge of Social Security, you know, I commend that. I must say the reason that we have this challenge is because of the advances in human medicine and a variety of fronts. And yet in this country, and what I wish I'd heard him talk more about, is that the problem that we have with over 40 million Americans with no health insurance, and the rest of those of us with health insurance, it is a fragmented reimbursement system. Costs are escalating in part, in my opinion, due to this fragmented reimbursement system. And I think it's going to require a similar general national bipartisan push to tackle this. Now, it can happen, we can limp on like we are with costs escalating 7 or 8% a year and the percentage of the gross national product being eaten by health care and the fact that we still have a huge diversity in our country in terms of the quality of health care. Or we can tackle it in a major, major way. And I wish I'd heard him say more about that.
Well, let me ask Michael Crowley what he makes of that.
Well, I think that's a great point. I mean, you know, the president talks about the need to confront Social Security now because it's a potential problem on the horizon. We have got some tremendous health care problems in the country today already. So it is admirable to be thinking over the long term, but there is a degree of racing past the house that's burning down to fireproof the one that's down the street. I think that what Bush has said about controlling healthcare costs is fairly feeble. I mean, it seems to amount to trying to want to limit malpractice awards, which is going to be another big fight in Congress. In fact, people who are wonkier than I say that the true crisis really has to do with Medicaid spending, and Bush almost never talks about that.
Layton, thanks for that call. Michael, I want to ask you a little bit more about that. Were you surprised not to hear more about Medicare spending, malpractice suits? I was actually expecting to hear something about that.
Yeah, you know, it's something that he talked about a lot in the campaign and got a lot of mileage out of. And he does seem, I think that Washington may be underestimating how intent the administration is on pushing through some legal reforms. The trial lawyers are a favorite villain of this administration. And I'm surprised he didn't talk about it more. You sort of see it starting to play out under the radar, but I don't think it's something that the White House or the city has really kind of thought through yet.
Jonah Goldberg, I wonder if I could ask you, you know, some people have already begun to point out the similarities. Maybe it's an unfair comparison, but I'll be interested in your thoughts about, you know, President Clinton came in with major, you know, bold idea to try to reform health care and health insurance. And, you know, it was so bold that, or maybe it was just misguided, I don't know, but that's, you know, that's another question. But here's another attempt to tackle a really big social issue at the start, you know, at the start of a term. Actually, it was the start of Clinton's first term, But, you know, is he potentially running into the same kind of quagmire that that President Clinton ran into?
I think there's some similarities, and I think you're right for raising them, but I think there are also some important differences. I think the fact that this is a second term is a crucial point. Bush is heading into a headwind of lame duckness no matter what. Clinton took on health care in his first term and got beaten, and it affected his administration for the rest of his time in office. He quickly decided he was going to be mayor of America rather than president of America and put forward all sorts of micro proposals. And that sort of brings up one of the things about last night's State of the Union was how un-Clinton-esque it was, even versus last year. It was not a laundry list. Everyone is criticizing the things that he didn't say because he was actually focused on one or two things. And I think that emerges directly from the fact that this is his second term. Karl Rove and Bush and these guys have looked very closely at why second terms are historically so bad for presidents. And I think one of the conclusions they've drawn is you got to pick one or two big, serious battles so you can set the agenda, so you don't let other people set it for you. And I think that's one of the reasons they focused on Social Security the way they have.
But is there, I mean, how much of what President Bush can accomplish is determined by the kind of president his supporters want him to be, and how much is determined by who he is and what he thinks is right and willing to take on issues that it will inevitably annoy people who both support him and oppose him?
That's a good question. I am not sure I have the answer to it. We do know that he can be very disciplined, that these guys are very good at the strategic thinking. You know, Michael Barone compares Bush to a pulsar, this sort of presidency that erupts with these giant bursts of light and then sort of recedes into darkness, and I think this is one of those moments. But it'll be very interesting to see how this works. I don't know.
Michael Crowley, you know, I asked Ken Mailman to speculate on this, but what do you think? I mean, this is, they always talk about Social Security, the third rail of politics. I love that expression. I've always wondered exactly what it means, but I guess I has to do with the subway analogy. You have to know about rapid transit.
It'd be from New York
City.
That's
right. You have to, or Washington. I think we also have a third rail. But you know, is it possible? I mean, you've seen this. The lines are staked out so passionately already. Is it possible to tackle something this big?
Well, you know, I think there's something kind of funny about the way that question is playing out in Democratic circles, because one looks at it and says, well, how can it be possible? Every Senate Democrat has essentially said that they're not going to play along with the White House or do anything kind of remotely close to what Bush seems to want. And even a bunch of moderate Republicans in the Senate are saying that. And even in the House, which has typically been very loyal and sort of Obesian, there are a lot of very nervous Republicans. But Democrats have this feeling that Bush always finds a way. And he's great. He's great when he wants something. He gets it. He's relentless. He drives hard bargains with people on the Hill. They twist arms hard. I have to say, right now, I don't see how it's going to work out. I think if they get something, it will be piecemeal and loaded with caveats. It will be watered down into a form in which it can be passed in the short term with the hope that over the longer term, it can gradually be shaped into something more like what conservatives want. But from where I sit, the prospects of short-term success seem very dim right now, success for any plan that looks very much like what conservatives are hoping for.
Do you agree with Jonah Goldberg that the president can only really pick one or two big issues? I think that I characterized that.
I think that they think that they can only really pick one or two.
But I mean, is that a reasonable strategy? Do you think, or can he really? I mean, can he really hope to get immigration reform and reform the tax law and a bunch of other things that he mentioned?
Well, I agree that that appears to be the strategy. I think it's probably a reasonable strategy. You know, the problem you have. It's true that Clinton's entire presidency was somewhat debilitated by the failure of health care. But even if this attempt fails, Bush still has a few years in which he's going to be facing the repercussions. So it's still audacious, even though they're waiting till the second term. There is a lot more, as you say, he really wants this immigration reform. There are a lot of other things he wants that I think are going to be much harder to accomplish. Defeat breeds defeat, as the saying goes. And I think also if this thing goes belly up, they're going to lose a lot of seats. They could potentially lose a lot of seats in the Congress. Newt Gingrich came to power in 1994, basically riding a backlash against Clinton's failed health care plan.
Interesting. That's Michael Crowley, senior editor at The New Republic. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Also here is Jonah Goldberg, editor-at-large of National Review Online, and he's a national syndicated columnist. And he also is in Studio 3A. We're taking your calls, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. You can check with us at 800-989-8255. Again, that number is 989-8989-TALK or TOTN at NPR.org. And let us take another call, this time from Kevin in Kansas City. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on the show. The Republican chairman that was on earlier had mentioned something about the activist judges and Bush believing that the people always know best. But that wasn't always the case, and I think the judges are in place for a purpose. People were, when women weren't allowed to vote in this country, were the people right then? When blacks were slaves in this country, were they right then? And when people believed that the center of the universe during Galileo's time, were the people always right then? That's really the only comment I wanted to make. And the judges, need to keep the tyrannical majority at bay.
Right. Okay, Kevin. Thanks for that call, Jonah Goldberg. This is obviously a very a point of great disagreement about whether the administration should be having the judges that they think are most in line with their philosophy and the philosophy, the majority. The majority of the country in terms of the outcome of the vote. The Democrats are saying we need to go more to the center. Is Bush really picking a fight here by sending up some of the names that got people most agitated again? Or does the Bush administration feel it has a winning issue here and can just say, we deserve a vote because we know we'll win it?
Well, first of all, I'm just trying to remember exactly the details of U.S. government v. Galileo. But
It was an old case.
It's a really
probably,
old case.
Yeah.
It's on a scroll somewhere.
Yeah.
Look, this is one of these perennial fights. Judges is just a fight. And look, if we're going to really talk about what Bush is going to do in the next 4 years, it's going to be Iraq, judges, Social Security, and maybe one or two other things. I mean, immigration is a real problem for Bush because it's bubbling up from below. There's a real split among the rank and file of the Republican Party versus what the elites of the party are saying, and it could be imposed on Bush, whether he likes it or not, as an issue. In terms of judges, I think Bush has a pretty good case. I mean, I know we don't like to talk about mandates, but Bush broke all sorts of historical precedents by bringing in candidates in the off-years election in 2002 and again in 2004, expanding his majorities in both houses, which you have to go back a long ways to find another example of. And I think part of the reason he did that was running on these issues like gay marriage, like activist judges. These are real bread and butter issues for a lot of Americans. And my guess is that if the Senate Democrats are obstructionist, certainly on a Supreme Court nominee, they're going to pay a price for it. But it's a really delicate dance, and both sides are super hypocrites because both sides always revert back to the position the other side had and then betraying their own position depending upon whether they're in power or not.
Super hypocrites. I mean, I'm a science reporter by day, so I'm thinking, is that like supersymmetry or something like that? No, maybe not. Well, I just wonder, though, just to pursue that a little bit. I mean, speaking of, sanctity of marriage, Couldn't he have just said, that's my first agenda, that's a gimme? I mean, that was the big cheer line, and he could just run that through and have it accomplished.
Well, I don't think he could run through a constitutional amendment.
Well, okay.
Constitutional amendments are notoriously difficult, thank goodness. But I think he needed to say it. I think social conservatives were watching to see that he did mention that. He did definitely run on that, and it helped him in a lot of places, so he couldn't abandon it.
Okay. We'll finish this discussion about the president's State of the Union message last night, and then on to the most expensive 30 seconds you'll see all year. The Super Bowl ads are almost here, a guide to what to expect. Stay with us, and we'll be hearing more from you about the State of the Union message and what you think should have happened. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here we're talking about the State of the Union message and the direction President Bush is taking, and I guess we know now he's out taking it to the people. Still with us here in Studio 3A are Jonah Goldberg, editor-at-large of National Review Online, and Michael Crowley, senior editor at The New Republic, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. And let's take a call from Andy in Detroit, Michigan. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about the fact that I was very disappointed with the previous election because one of the issues which was most important to me, Social Security, I didn't actually think anyone was going to do anything about it, not John Kerry, Ralph Nader, or George Bush. As a result, I wound up voting for Ralph Nader as my best way of checking the none-of-the-above box for president. But that being said, I'm thrilled that Bush is actually doing something about Social Security, and had I known he was this serious about doing something about it, I certainly would have voted for him.
Interesting. Michael Crowley, what does that make you feel like when you hear that?
Well,
you were suggesting bait and switch earlier.
Yeah, no, it's funny because the critique is that people will be sort of dismayed to discover what he's done, and this is kind of an interesting spin on the theme. You know, I guess it depends a little bit on what the caller is hoping will happen to Social Security. I think that you know, it's impossible to know the president's true motives, but I think it's clear that for years, conservatives have talked about essentially getting rid of Social Security, and that it's not clear to me that the president wants to strengthen, reform, and save the program. My hunch is that the president is interested in starting a chain of events which may eventually render the program extinct. And so if the caller wants to see a strong, healthy Social Security program similar to the one that we see, I'm not so sure he should be excited that the president is making this a priority.
Okay, Andy, thanks for that call. Let's try Paul in Prairie Village, Kansas. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi there. I'm a liberal kind of guy, but I'm just wondering where the abortion issue was last night. And I'm wondering, is this an issue that the president and Republicans are really serious about, or is this just something they want to continue to beat up the Democrats about? And as I understand it, a constitutional amendment could be sought out on this thing, but does he not want to go that route? And if so, why not?
Well, maybe I can turn to Jonah Goldberg for a thought on that. Thank you, Paul.
I think the basic thinking about why they don't go for a constitutional amendment on abortion is because they're pretty sure it would not pass. And so it would be wasting a lot of energy and time on something that would not come to fruition. Bush is pleasing basically the pro-lifers are basically pleased with Bush, apart from his cultural status, because he's appointing the right kinds of judges and he's taking the right kinds of policies where he can and when he can.
Is there anything else, any other social issue that he has to tackle? I mean, for a while, you know, he was being pushed pretty hard on stem cells, you know, he made a decision allowing certain kinds of stem cells, but he still made the point last night that he wasn't going to allow embryos to be created for harvesting their parts or something like that. Does he have to keep saying those things through his administration?
I think he needs to keep saying those things. I also think, I mean, you're a science reporter, you know this stuff better than I, but I think there's also this pretty good gamble that science is just going to work its way around this issue, and they're going to find stem cells from other sources. There was a study recently about bone marrow that will preclude needing to use embryonic stem cells.
All right. Well, yes, go ahead.
Just on the
Michael
abortion
Crowley.
Point, I would add that I think that my sense of the Republican strategy is that they don't like going for these dramatic gambits like a constitutional amendment. They want to do it incrementally. So as I understand it, the big legislative priority now for the pro-life movement is a bill, I think it has a name, something like the Fetal Pain Act. And if a woman is seeking an abortion, she'll be asked if she wants anesthesia for the fetus. And the idea is to try to drive home to women that, possibility that the fetus would be feeling excruciating pain. By no means does everyone accept that to be a fact, but this is similar to the partial birth abortion movement, where you kind of pick out the most sort of unpleasant elements of the debate in a way that will hopefully move public opinion without trying to kind of throw the long bomb and get it all done at once.
Well, gentlemen, we started with a controversial hot-button issue of Social Security, and we ended up with a controversial hot-button issue of abortion, but I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this segment. Thanks very much. That was Michael Crowley. He's a senior editor at The New Republic. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Also joining us was Jonah Goldberg. He's the editor-at-large of National Review Online and a nationally syndicated column. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.